Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Conversations with Cleo, Thursday evenings live at 7:30 p.m. Real talk for those who live outside the matrix. Call me now and join the conversation at 347-826-9597 or hail me up on Twitter at Real Miss Cleo, that's REALMSCLEO, or visit me at conversationswithcleo.com. Become a part of the economic evolution. Red or blue, you decide.
I was born in the Congo. I walked to the Fertile Crescent and built a Sphinx. I designed a pyramid so tough that a star that only glows every 100 years falls into the center, giving divine, perfect light. I am bad. I sat on the throne drinking nectar with Allah. I got hot and sent an ice age to Europe to cool my thirst. My oldest daughter is Nefertiti. The tears from my birth pains created the Nile. I am a beautiful woman. I gazed on the forest and burned out the Sahara Desert. With a packet of goat meat and a change of clothes, I crossed it in 2 hours. I am a gazelle, so swift, you can't catch me. For a birthday present when he was 3, I gave my son Hannibal an elephant. He gave me Rome for Mother's Day. My strength flows ever on. My son Noah built new ark, and I stood proudly at the helm as we sailed on a soft summer day. I turned myself into myself and was Jesus. Men intoned my loving name. All praises, I am the one who would save. I sowed diamonds in my backyard. My bowels delivered uranium. The filings from my fingernails are semi-precious jewels. On a trip north, I caught a cold and blew my nose, giving oil to the Arab world. I am so hip, even my errors are correct. I sailed west to reach east and had to round off the earth as I went. The hair from my head thinned and gold was laid across 3 continents. I am so perfect, so divine, so ethereal, so surreal. I cannot be comprehended except by my permission. I mean, I can fly like a bird in the sky.
Good evening, my dear. This Tough to Follow, Professor Nikki Giovanni. Good evening, everyone. It is July 25th, 2013, 7:32, and welcome to Conversations with Cleo. With all that is going on in the world, for those of you who show up live, I much appreciate your time because you make a choice to share it with me. And for all of you who archive and catch up with me later, please know how equally important you are as well. First and foremost, tonight's show entitled What It Is to Be Black Female and Gay in America, My Personal Stories. All of these events that we're going to be discussing tonight are personal events that took place past midway through the journey, and some events are very, very recent in the last couple of years. And I started to feel as the conversation was moving through around this country that while we are indeed very sensitive to the hurt and the pain that Black men, no matter where their origin is from, have felt as a result of these most recent events, we also need to bring the conversation back around to women beyond that place of motherhood, because women experience their very own specific vibrations. If you are a lesbian, that adds the layer. And of course, being Black, we typically are the last ones, Black women on the totem pole. We pose the greatest threat. And certainly many of you already know that. And some of you may come to glimpse on that a little bit differently as we move through today's show. As you all are looking at the pictures that are scrolling through, I need to make note as to who these women are. One is me, a retro Cleo. Very, very fun. The glasses, wow. There is also a photo up there. The young girl is Latasha Harlins. You all hear me speak of her often. She has been an inspiration and one of my heroes for more than two decades now. And there is Angela Davis in her heyday, known for her afro as well. That's the attitude that she is showing there and her knowledge. And now she is a celebrated out activist, black and lesbian, out and gay. There is also a younger picture there of the irrepressible Professor Nikki Giovanni in her younger days as well. And she is a activist, poet, black and a out and proud gay or person, lesbian. And of course, there is a picture of my girl, Marissa Alexander. And we will give a shout out to her daily, each and every time there is a show, I mean weekly, we will give a shout out to her, because that is a task that, as I shared with you last week, I am committed to seeing it through and following it through. I do not want her to get lost in this shuffle. And because this conversation today does have much to do with women, and Marissa, let me be clear, is not gay. So I'm trying to identify, if I haven't identified that they're gay or lesbian, rather, whichever word people are comfortable with, then we're operating with straight. And just so I want to be clear, and let me clarify for those of you who may be tuning in to think that you know what you know about Cleo, you might be surprised, but I am a proud black woman who is Jamaican. I am a proud woman, and I am a proud lesbian. There have been many times when I've run into people and they're absolutely gobsmacked that I will be at a gay event, and they think I'm there for moral support. And they've asked me, "Miss Cleo, I don't get it. What are you doing here? I'm gay." They didn't know. It's interesting. What you do, go and get ahead of the media and deliver. If they're not interested, they let it go. But so today we are going to just chat about some of the things that I know that I've moved through. And I almost feel like there is a community out there that needs somebody to speak for us. And I don't know that there's ever a time when all three of these vibrations are coming together and speaking to changes or speaking to things or biases. Our biases that we all can fall subject to. I won't say victim, but, you know, given the vibration. So there's really not a position for people to judge. So this is not what this show is about. This is not me levying any kind of personal anger. It is about sharing stories that I know for a fact that I am not the only person who has moved through this. But when you are a black woman and gay in America, it is not an easy task to navigate, and sometimes it can be quite confusing depending on what your perspective is. So giving love out to all people that I adore. So we're going to be talking about some real things today, so we're not going to sugarcoat them. We're going to be having some nice vibrations and some nice music and some very poignant poetry as we keep it rolling. Gotta give out some love and some serious props to my brethren at PD Radio, and that is at Poetic Designs, and that is at Black District. If you get a chance, once you finish listening to my show, go on over, hit them up. You can hit them up if you go to my website and go to Full Moon Madness, and there you can click the link. It takes you right to their show. they had open mic night on Tuesday night, and unfortunately I was working and I was not able to attend. And I've got to get a little more notice under my belt so I can be ready for the next one. That's my fault. But it is some serious vibrations on there. So by all means, if poetry is what soothes your soul right now, then absolutely head your way over to PD Radio. Again, or you can hit them up at Poetic Designs and at Black District by all means. All right, we are going to take a quick break. We're going to set a vibration, going to set a tone. And then when we come back, we are going to jump right into some of my personal histrionics and just what it has looked like being Black, female, and gay in America. It has it is definitely brought me to a new understanding.
And work hard to get comfortable in my own skin. From the time I was born, someone somewhere deemed that there was something wrong with me. Enough people believe that you choose your parents and your destiny. I have looked at the concept, reviewed the theory, and I respectfully disagree, for I would not have chosen to be a Black pixie and a sheep. Because when I arrived on the scene, being Black wasn't a good thing at all, at least not how it looked to me. Let me skip ahead in order to keep a long story short to the time in my life when I became aware of my sexuality. I knew that I loved women, got nothing but my love for men, but only a woman could steal my heart. And once again, I was compelled to recognize that someone somewhere deemed that something was wrong with me. Someone asked me what hurts worse. There was no hesitation on my part, racism of course. They asked, isn't it the same thing? I replied, no, it's not the same thing. And then again, maybe it is, or better yet, maybe it's the lesser of two evils. The conversation came back to me as I sat under the mango tree, wishing I could have spoken words to help someone somewhere understand. So I asked myself, why does it hurt worse if someone somewhere calls me a nigger rather than a bull dagger or a dyke? Why does it hurt worse if I am pigeonholed and profiled as an angry Black woman that fits the description of someone who might steal, instead of someone somewhere sneering and casting looks at me for holding my girlfriend's hand? Why does it hurt so bad when I think about the president's children and how hard it must be for he and the first lady to protect their Black pygmy from all the hate-filled, ignorant words that run rampant over the airwaves, instead of being saddened and dismayed by another failed attempt to make it legal for married people to be gay? Why? Because I'm Black. Someone somewhere might say, that's too simple a cop-out. Then let me break it down this way. I never got pulled over by the police for walking home at night because I was gay. I was never ignored at a diner or a restaurant, which happened to be in the white, in the right part of town because I was gay. I don't worry about driving through a good neighborhood at night because I'm gay. I was never underpaid and replaced by an SWL who was paid twice as much as me because I was gay. As a child, I was never tormented, picked on, or belittled because I was gay. I don't remember any signs telling me to keep out because I was gay. I have never been profiled and detained by INS and Homeland Security because I was gay. I have never searched for a friendly face that looks like me and a sea of people who don't look anything like me because I'm gay. I have never had my intelligence judged before I spoke because I was gay. Stick your head in the sand, deny what's going on. I'm not looking for your pity, I'm sure as hell don't want your empathy. I'm not an angry Black woman, I have made my own way, despite someone somewhere. I am frustrated, pained and tired, wondering and waiting for this racism bullshit to end. And it would be one thing if it was all in the past, but it's not. Laws had to be written and ratified to validate our humanity, as opposed to our prior category known as property. And it is not my problem if someone somewhere
thinks or believes we are hypersensitive or we perpetuate the division. And while it may not seem like I have remembered the lesser of the two evils, I have. Because 95% of the homophobia I've experienced has been at the hands and mouths of my own brethren. Nothing to celebrate there, and here we go again. Someone somewhere deemed that something was wrong with me. So instead of casting me out, I was given a choice. It's us or them. To hell with me and my heart. Never was afraid of losing my job because I was black, but I did worry once because I was gay. Why hear the joke? It was a black woman threatening to turn me in because she heard from another black woman who was just as gay as I was, but also closeted and a card-carrying Republican. The birth attention from self and onto someone else. That was that jump rope strategy. Stereotype or truth, what would it benefit this bitch to take food out of the mouth of my youth? And for the record, and in case I haven't been clear, it hurt like hell. It prompted me to come out of the closet, take back my power, dash away the fear and tell all my brethren. Uh-oh. Needless to say, it didn't go well. No warm embraces, only denial, accusations, and ultimately rejection. From most, not all. And just to make sure I bring this ride full circle, let me add that on those occasions where I find myself navigating both evils on the same day, in the same moment, with someone somewhere who decides in their little pee-ass brain, I am not worthy, I have no right, and I need to be gone. Those occasions, brethren, them fuckers hurt most of all. People can spend a lifetime in therapy fighting, trying, working to overcome the wounds and pains of childhood, and it is an accepted, reasonable, rational truth, no justification required. So why is it so hard to accept that an entire race of people might need more than 50 years to get over more than 180 far years of hatred, injustice, dismissal, and degradation in a country where they don't let us forget? I realize I can't help someone somewhere understand where I'm coming from. Instead, I have been met with judgment, denial, and travail. No matter the evil, no matter the day, from someone somewhere who has decided that I don't have a right to my personal pain. As things stand, I'm not sure what to expect, so I am left asking for one thing. Simple respect for my life experience, chop, and let's leave it at that. Then,
you all know that each and every time I play Lesser, I have to give much love to T-Walk, Mr. Make You Like It Right Now, and to my wonderful engineer, Mark Carmatz, at Insane Sounds. I've probably been working on that piece for 55 years, you understand? And each and every time I listen to it, it still continues to feel very complete in where I got to when those were the memories of what I had to move through. And somebody actually did ask me that question, you know, which one is worse? And I again, the story plays out throughout that piece. And I remember when I first did it at the end, and that's me holding a tune, singing a bit, and my partner said, "Wow, you know, it's this really deep, intense song, but you've got this melodic vibration at the end." I said, "Well, it's almost like that's the flip side of my pain as well as my peace. You know, I would like to be there as opposed to having to be concerned about which is lesser. I would prefer to engage in simple respect of what my life experience has been. Don't debate it with me. Don't dismiss it. Don't rationalize it. Don't try and embrace it to make it your own. Respect it." But I'm going to take you way back. We're going to go even Marvin Gaye back. And just so you all are aware, despite what the fuckery did upon the internet about my age, I can't be bothered. But what I will tell you is that signs were still very visible in many places back in the early 60s. And if you didn't see the sign, the elders or the adults that you were in the company with, you could always feel when they steered very clear of certain establishments. But it was interesting. My very first encounter with being a black child in America, all right, at 6 years old, having come up probably 2 years prior. And I remember seeing the map of the world. And my mom and dad worked very hard, so we did have advantages there. All was what it was. But we had an atlas at home. There were big books back in those days. They were enormous. And I came home one day from school, and I opened up the atlas, and I looked at Africa. And then I remember saying to the brother, just older than I am, I said, "You're a nigger." I said, "See, so-and-so at school told me this is where we come from. See, there's a place called Nigger, and that's where we are from." Well, he took off, he light up, you know, running across the house. "Mommy, mommy, Malik called me a nigger. Mommy, mommy." And I'm not really understanding what the problem is. But, you know, a child is a child. And I did not have a sense of what the upset was. I'm applying my phonetics. I'm looking at the word. I'm thinking that's not the way I hear it sound, but that must be the word because somebody at school told me. And this was a predominantly non-black. It was a predominantly white school. And some other person said, "This is where you come from." This was an institution, Immaculate Conception of Mary. And so I stood out like a sore thumb, clearly. And I remember my mother came into the bedroom and she was very vexed with me. And she said, "Where did you get that from? Where did you hear this?" And I'm still trying to plead my case with the atlas open and saying, "But mommy, look." And, you know, I wasn't sure she was going to slap me upside my head or hug me. I'm not sure that she knew what she was going to do, and she had to go ahead and explain to me. But for her, it was a very interesting vibration. And those of you who know traditional island families, while we lived here stateside, it was still very much traditional at home. And my mother, including a few elder aunts and whatnot, ruled the roost. My father went to work. There were, at my age, when I was cognizant of everybody being around at any given point in time, there were 6 to 7 brothers at home. There are a total of 10 in the family. And I am the only girl. In Jamaica, everything looks like everything. You are Jamaican, no matter what your flavor. So our family looked like everything. I had my favorite uncle, Philip Keane, had blue eyes and light hair. I have a niece named Norma, has green eyes and blonde hair. We look many ways for many different reasons. The hues are consistent no matter where the people of color come from. The hues are amazing. But my mom, she suffered from internalized racism. So for her, she was a businesswoman always. Did some amazing things as a woman, as a black foreigner, as a foreign nigger. And very intelligent and came stateside, both of them, and did some pretty remarkable things. And but she was a Republican, card carrying, which was just a slap in the face, very much focused on money. And in her mind, the translation was white was always better, and the education was going to be better, the neighborhood was going to be better. And that's what she did. She immersed each and every one of us into very, very homogenized, very carnation-like environments. And while that worked for a few of us, and probably more than a few, it didn't work so well for me. And there was so much she wanted. If you were light-complected in the family, because we spanned many hues, then she wanted you out of the sun. I remember when my daughters, I have a couple of them, and my elder daughter is very fair, and my younger daughter is very, very chocolate. And at one point, she had my youngest daughter scrubbing her knees to the point of rawness. And I said, what are you doing to your knees? And she said, Grandma said my knees are too black. So if we're going to have an honest conversation, my dears, and I mean earnest, we first have to understand our own internalized racism that is constant, which is continually passed on from generation to generation to generation. And at some point in time, it has to cease. If we want to tell and teach people how to treat we, then we better have a pretty goddamn clear idea of how to treat we. But I digress. Understand that I was a big kid in elementary school. I was bigger than everybody. I came from a big family, but I was bigger than everybody. And so when you are big and little white children pick on you, guess who gets in trouble? Guess who gets taken home by the principal? Because you are big and all of these little white kids, they're tiny, but they are goading you. They are calling you names. They are calling you Jungle Bunny. They are telling you to get back on a boat. And then, fuck, I came here on a goddamn plane. When was the last time you were on a plane? But this is what happened on the playground. But guess who got in trouble every fucking time? Every fucking time. My big little cappuccino ass was getting in trouble. You understand? Black no blood clot. But my mother always have to make the differential. You understand? Always getting into trouble. Because I didn't have words back then. I was a big baby Huey. Remember that cartoon? Some of you that are old enough, if you don't, Google it. But I was a big baby Huey, and I was nothing but a whole bunch of sensitive feelings. You understand, my feelings would get hurt if you looked at me the wrong way. But I knew my brothers had told me, you're not going nowhere and make nobody lick you down. You're not, you, my mother used to say, you're not starting a fight, but you know better finish it. So this is already the instruction coming from home. And then she pops me into an environment where did she really think I wasn't going to have a war? Seriously. When people can call me all manner of thing, and then I go home and they say that you shouldn't hit nobody because they called you a name, it's all right. Here's the deal. I got it real clear very early that it wasn't all right. Plain and simple. It was not okay, but clearly then in those days you listened to your parents. However, I continued to find myself in situations, if you would. And I found myself in a situation until they took far more drastic measures. And so one particular day I was in fifth grade. And I always had to sit at the back of the class because I was too tall and nobody could ever see over me. So it made me feel like I was sitting at the back of the fucking bus, right? I was sitting at the back of the class. And this tall boy was sitting in the front. And his name was Gabriel. Now, he was not white, but he was Samoan. But he was the only one in there. And, you know, Samoan people don't look that much different from black people. They're just like black Polynesians, right? So we are playing the dozens, and this is not a nice game. You understand, for those of you who don't know, cracking jokes, however, we called it the dozens back in the day. So somebody says something fucked up about you, you say something fucked up about them. But when you cross the line and you move into family, it becomes very, very, very dangerous. You start a war that way. So we all go back and forth. He's sitting in the front of the room. And he had turned around and lick off something at me. Me turn and lick off something at him. So at one point, him turn around and he crossed the line. Him a chat about my mother. Hear me now. I don't care what kind of feelings I had about my mother personally. You don't get for chat about her. And he said, my mother had a dick. Well, let me tell you something, my dears. I got my round, chunky ass up out of my desk, walked up to the front of the classroom, and I licked him upside his big rascal head. Bomba, the teacher jump up. Miss Harris, what are you doing? What are you doing? And I said, he said something wrong about my mother. And I'll never forget the teacher's name. He was Mr. Espinosa. And Mr. Espinosa said, well, then tell the class what he said. I said, are you sure? And he said, yes, I'm sure. Turn around, come to the front of the class and tell everyone what he said. And I said, he said my mother had a dick. Mr. Espinosa's face went redder than a tomato. And so he decided to choose this opportunity to allow us to plead our cases, if you would. He selected a jury from class to see if I was wrong or justified in licking Gabriel upside the fucking head, right? So we go through this whole exercise. And I don't even remember what the outcome was from the thing. I'm done with it. I'm walking home. Back in those days, you could walk home. I'm walking home by myself. I'm probably a good mile away from this little school. I'm walking home, and here comes Gabriel and four of him brethren, right? Like I said, folks, don't forget, big girl. You understand? At that point, fifth grade, I had to be tipping the scales at about 145. I wasn't nothing small about me. And Gabriel was not short, but some of the rest of him brethren, you know, men grow slower. So they were smaller. And so here they come. One of them spits at me. And so I spit back because, you know, equal farce, right? Equal farce. So, and then he comes and tries to do something, and I literally just toss him out of the way. He's little. And so they're still following me and talking trash. And I told you I didn't have words. So one next one, him and his twin brother, them go to karate, right? So he wants to throw one karate kick. This is where it got a little crucial. He threw up the kick. I grabbed that foot, and I heard something snap. And then, you know, they decide they want to jump me. Well, long story short, we come back around next day. I'm sitting in the playground. My ass is nervous, right? Because at one point, there was an old man sitting on his porch, and he told the boys, you all leave that little girl alone. And Gabriel said, this is no girl. Are you kidding me? What the hell? That's because they were getting their ass beat by a girl. So I'm sitting on the playground, and so far, so good, you know. And all of a sudden, over the speaker, I hear, Yuri Cleoma Lee Harris, come to the principal's office now. Uh-oh, life is getting ready to get bad. So I go to the principal's office, and Sister Marie Cecile is sitting in the outer office, and she looks at me and just shakes her head, right? And I walk into Sister Lawrence. This was a big nun, boy. Back in those days, they wore the combat boots and the industrial strength rosaries, and you could only see them nose. And they had the and the paddle, you know, because they could still beat you in school, especially in a Catholic school. So all of a sudden, as I'm walking into her office, I see all of the boys from that jumped me the day before. One, two of them are in cast. One has a bandage around his head. The other one has a scrape on his face. And their parents are in there. Some had both parents. Some had mothers. And Sister Lawrence looks at me and said, did you do all of this? And I thought to myself, this is a trick question. This is a trick question. And I said, yes. And she said, who are you covering for? Surely somebody helped you. And I said, no, I'm not covering. I said, well, I didn't scratch up Gabriel's face. I said, that happened after I departed because somebody else that knew me, another chick that lived down the street from me, came. And, you know, she fought like a girl. I had 9 brothers, man. I wasn't fighting like no girl. I was going to take your rascal out, man, because them hurt my feelings. So at this point, the principal is going to take me home. So she's a big woman and she walks slow. By the time she pulled up to the house, I run out of the car. I run, go find my mother. I said, mommy, you remember when you tell me we're not supposed to start the fight, but we must finish it. Sister Lawrence is behind me. And me, I get into a fight because the little boy said you had a dick. She looks at me. She said, go up to your room. So see me up there in my room, shaking, chattering. And so they exchange notes. I go back to school the next day. And her and Principal Lawrence, they exchange notes. Summertime comes. Summertime goes. I didn't get to go to summer camp, right? And I used to go to an all little girls' Catholic summer camp, boarding school kind of thing. So it's time to go get uniforms. You understand? So we go to the uniform store. And they start to measure me for the uniform. And my uniform was red. And the woman is giving me blue and blue plaid, can you imagine, with a gold trim, running through to try on. And I said, this is the wrong uniform. I said, I go to Immaculate Conception of Mary. And she said, well, this uniform is right for Ramona Convent Secondary Preparatory. I said, well, I don't go there. And my mother said, yes, you do. So without any knowledge to me or my dad, I have been put in boarding school. Because at that point, my mom thought that that would produce a lady and not such a rogatek. So I get taken away from my daddy, who was my world. And I'm mad and I'm hot. So I go to this boarding school. Once again, I am now the only black pickney in this vibration. There are about 60 girls in the boarding school and about 600 students in the day school. The only other girl who looks like me is from Uganda, and her father was a diplomatic attaché or something of that nature. So we are both foreign black folks, which allows white people back in those days to act absolutely ignorant. So one example of this is I am in this boarding school. I'm not happy. The den mother that I have that takes care of my dormitory, her name was Miss Julie. Wonderful woman. She was a saving grace to me. She was Italian, and she took a liking to me. So it was a privilege to sit at the dinner table with the dorm moderators, you know, or the den mothers. And so one evening, Miss Julie says, well, I select you to come and sit at the table, and I'm the one go sit and eat no food with these people. So Sister Helen, who was a PhD psychologist, is the head marm of the boarding school. So we're sitting at the table and we're eating the food. And so she looks at me and she says, so, Miss Harris, do you speak black colloquial slang or do you speak the King's English? And I'm about 11 years old now. I look at Miss Julie and she just drops her head because she's absolutely uncertain as to what the fuck is coming out of my mouth next. And I look back at Sister Helen and I said, what am I speaking now? You know, because it was a stupid question. But this was a woman who was in a position of authority. What I can tell you is that while in that school, I am very aware of the conditioning for me to not be in love with myself as a black person. Many, many years later, I ran into the young woman who was from Uganda, and I asked her if she ever went back to the reunion. She said, are you fucking kidding me? She said, I wouldn't step foot. She said, you couldn't pay me to step foot back on that campus. So that's what all of that looked like. And I did mention that it was an all-girl boarding school. What my mother hoped to achieve fell quite short, though, except for ushering me out of the closet at a very, 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 very early age. As I became older, I became less resentful and quite grateful to my mother for sending me to an all-girl boarding school, only to fall in love with a blonde-haired, blue-eyed young woman from both my junior and senior year. And then when we were busted by her father, who wasn't real tickled about me being black in the first place, well, we'll just leave it at that. And, you know, and things moved on. So I decided that, you know, I was going to work for a change. I was going to work for something different. I was going to come out of this vibration and I was going to affect change. I was going to be that militant. I was going to be an activist. And that's what I became. And that's what I immersed myself in. And I lobbied and worked hard to go to UC Berkeley. And back in those days, it was called Berserkly. Every salient, pertinent protest was happening at the Berkeley campus in Oakland, in San Francisco, breaking ground. And it was supposed to be this mecca of change. And when I got there, I remember when I realized that it was some sort of farce, because it was very clear that the dorms were segregated. And so much of what I was trying to achieve or fought against having happened to me as a child occurred as a result of my mother's own internalized racism and what she perceived to be the way to go, the way to advance in this country. What I can give her is that the education was phenomenal, and I am forever grateful for that. As I said, as I've gotten older, that resentment for those choices at that time has waned. However, the understory and the madness, for all intents purposes, continues on. And so understand that when people, and this is for those of you who are listening to me who are non-black, understand that these are just a few of the stories that I remember about racism as a child. But the stories, while they do not burn my soul like they once did, the memory has not gone away. Am I angry? No, I've moved through many things. But that was the foundation. That is where it began, and I carried that through even into my adult elder years. The concept of so many things that were so important to my mother. My goodness, if you spoke patois in front of my mother, she would slap you, because she knew that if you spoke with an accent in this country, it was going to keep you back. She pushed knowing more than one language. She knew if you did not, it would not accelerate you. She was very clear that as a black child, as a black female, I was going to have to work 3 or 4 times as hard. She never tried to soften that reality. And I understood that as well. But she also, in her own malaise, would preach all of these other things, and she had her own biases. You know, we don't like to speak to the biases of our internalized racism, but I will give you a very innocent one that has nothing to do with America, but just in that we lack knowledge sometimes. My Aunt Reba, who had come to visit, she had come up to visit, and she, my mom had said to her, "We are going to go to Hawaii." And she, I remember, and this is in, I'm in my early 20s at this time, married to my late husband. And she said, "Darling," she said, "I don't know how to tell your mother that I don't want to go to Hawaii." I said, "Well, Enriva, why wouldn't you want to go to Hawaii? It's a nice trip. Mommy's paying. Don't stress it." She said, "I don't think I can look at people walking around without any bras and shirts on, you know. And then the men, they don't have anything on underneath those skirts." And I skin over. Because she had no idea. Now, this was probably in 1982 when she I had this conversation because the biases that had been painted. She thought everybody was running around in pure grass skirt and loincloth and coconut shell for bra. So those were even, those biases come from so many places, but they are continued and fueled by folks not making a choice to further educate or to share additional education. And so we get caught up in the bullshit. We get caught up in the BS. And we feed into this continuum, so much so that now people have taken to terms such as reverse racism, and that black people can be racist. You have to be in a position of power in order to be the racist or to be the dominating individual. It is not about numbers. It is about mindset. It is about the money. It is about the power. It is about the land. It's been created that way from start. There's absolutely no reason for people to run around with blinders on their face. And again, as I bring this coming back around to full circle, that being black in America is a very tough dynamic. And when we come back from a few commercials here, showing some love to our small business and independent businesses, we are going to come back and we are going to talk about the female part. We are going to talk about what it is to be a black woman and how, in my opinion, we continue to get the short end of the deal, and in particular coming from an all-male family, how that was a positive in many ways, and how out in the universe, out in the world, it can be a profound negative. All right, my dears, back in two shakes, but now we're gonna show some love. Good food, good drinks, good people, and a waterfront view. You must be talking about Wahoo's River House, located at 915 Northwest Fagler Street, Stuart, Florida. Visit them at www.wahoostuart.com or call them at 772-692-2243. The servers are top drawer and the bartenders are serious mixologists. Wahoo's River House. That's where I go when I want to get away. Maybe I'll see you there. Hey, did you know that crabs have balls? Passion for Paws, a nonprofit with a new approach. They believe in assisting disabled, elderly, or family members in financial crisis to keep their canine family members within the home. Passion for Paws truly understands that our dogs are members of the family, and no one should ever have to make the difficult choice to let their canine family member go because of an unforeseen event or crisis. Ava Rhodes, Executive Director at Passion for Paws, is looking for volunteers, foster home, vet care services, and sponsors of pet food drives. She is a gentle and committed spirit with a passion for paws. You can visit her at www.passionforpaws.info. You will find all of the pertinent information, and there you can donate your time or your money. Once again, we thank you, and the dogs and canines that I know personally, thank you as well. Ozo 2, the future of dry cleaning. Eco-friendly, convenience-driven, and customer-conscious. Free pickup and delivery, biodegradable bags, and a hanger return program in order to keep their prices low. Stop by for a visit at any of their locations in West Palm Beach and now in Jupiter, or visit them at www.ozo2usa.com. That's ozo2usa.com. Or you can like them on Facebook as well. Thank you, Ozo2, for keeping the planet in mind. you know, the vibration of being female and black in America is an intense one, because again, as I have lived and observed myself, that we really do, we get paid traditionally the lowest. If you put a white man, white woman, black man, black woman, we are going to traditionally be on the lower rung of that payment scale. I was replaced once at a job where I worked for a South African man, South African white man. And when he replaced me with a single white female and paid her double what he paid me. And as I was leaving, I made him aware of what my feelings were about that. And he looked me in the face quite calmly with a very smug smile and looked at me and said, "You negotiated yourself a poor deal." Now, I could have went away being angry with that son of a bitch, but instead he taught me a very valuable lesson, which is to know your value. This is the other thing. Every event that happens does not denote a bad experience. Hopefully, as I have moved through this journey, I have learned that. So even as a woman and moving through and delivering excellence and listening to what my parents had to say, I did master the English language brilliantly without any sort of accent. However, that backfired on me twice along this journey. One time I was working as a headhunter, and I had a client call me, and she wanted two positions filled. And all I was thinking is, ooh, this is going to be a good commission check. And I'm thinking in my mind of a number of people. And this is while I am living in North Miami Beach many, many, many moons ago. At one point, this woman's name was Betty. And she said, "Oh, but by the way, please no black people. I have too many here." And she said, "I know that sounds awful." And I said to her, I said, "Well, I won't tell anyone if you don't." And then probably 2 weeks later, I went in and I quit my job because my boss relayed to me that I was taking it too personally. And I said, "Well, I was born black. I live black. I'm pretty sure I'm going to die black. So I don't know how I don't take it personally." And still very impetuous. And then many years passed. And again, this is dealing with women, women on women. This is, again, that vibration of, you know how much harder you're going to have to work. I was interviewed by a woman on the phone. This was back when you mailed a resume and someone actually read your resume and then called your landline. And she called me and read my resume and thought I was wonderful and thought I was delicious and how, let me get you in and the interview will just be a matter of a formality. Until my 6'3", 215, 220 pound self with my Farrah Fawcett bone straight perm showed up, and the woman's face hit the ground. And do you know that she had the audacity to look me in my face and said, "Oh my goodness, I had your resume mixed up with someone else's. But I can give you the interview anyway." And I made her do it. I went ahead and did the interview because I needed her to be uncomfortable. Because that's the way it was moving. And that was in Los Angeles, where everybody thinks everything is so hip and so forward. And in places like that, the smiling faces are what will get you. For many, many, many times I have run into, especially back in the day when men were dominant in so many places, if a man was a short man, he had a Napoleon syndrome. And again, dealing with 6'3", 6'4", because I never wore anything less than a 3-inch heel on the job or in the job place. There were men. Men would come up to me randomly anywhere. "How tall are you? How tall?" It was an issue. I have had men come up to me and tell me to my face how intimidating I am. And I'm not sure why they even feel the need to share with me that they are intimidated. Or they want to conquer you on some level. Shortest man in the room, they will come and find me. And it is really, why are you so in need of having to rush my world? You're all up in my personal space. You're in my bubble space. Back off. But you want to tell me that I intimidate you as a woman, and being the size that you are. It's almost, for men, those of you listening, you know, if you're a big man, if you're strapped in, if you're buff, people always want to step to you for some reason. They want to step to you. They want to start something with you. And both men and women that are intimidated by my size and my womanhood, and they'll tell me, "Oh, you have a very large presence." Almost like it's a backhanded compliment. I've heard that from straight women, and I've surely heard it from lesbian women. And of course, if they're a little bit too butch, then they aren't sure where I sit, and they want to step to you too. So it's very interesting. Given the amount of male energy that I feel I carry just on an energy level, because I am fabulous anyway, I dress it up. But my father is my foundation for the woman that I am. My brothers gave me so, so much. And so for me, I'm not even, I have been maligned from the lesbian community because I have such respect for men. Well, men are the vibration that made me this amazing black female and lesbian in America. And it's because even with my movement, I am a gentle person. I don't claim man, so I am not butch. I don't claim that either. So I can say a gentleman. We make tongue in joke, you know, tongue in cheek joke. But, oh, and gosh, please don't get too freaky on me, you all, those of you that are all over the map with the freaky deaky. I didn't mean it like that. And, of course, I went there eventually. Shame on me. And I'm kind of breaking it down into a separate place so I can get to where it's been in the last 25 years, where I've had to navigate all of that in one fucking day. And I have chosen, when I wrote Lesser, I chose that that was not going to be my navigation anymore. People could navigate like that, but I was not going to navigate like that. And working with women will put you in a challenge. When we talk about being black and being gay, black and being lesbian, it is a very different vibration. In my second long-term relationship, second marriage, I had a sister-in-law who was a religious zealot, and she would very openly say, God created Adam and Eve, not Adam and Steve. She didn't want her son to call me aunt, preferred that he call me Miss Harris. And when my wife at the time said, well, if she was a man, what would the child be calling her Miss Harris? No, I'd be calling him uncle. She said, well, then not, you need to call her aunt. And here was the funny part about it. Whenever she needed a babysitter last minute, it was absolutely fine for that little boy to come and stay with a couple of lesbians, but she was not comfortable with the little boy calling me aunt. It was fascinating, and she made no bones about it. With my youngest daughter, and this is many, many moons ago, I had a very different, we were roommates for years. I was not out to her. When I decided that I wanted to have my daughter, very unorthodox way, different show, different story, I wanted her to be the godmother. And one day we were carpooling on our way to work. We worked not too far from each other, and I'm pregnant at the time. And I'm telling her about a quick story about this couple at work and how I finally introduced them because they were cooing over each other. And the girl happened to be white, and the man happened to be black. And long story short, my friend went ballistic on me about how could you do that, you know, to our black man. Why would you introduce him to a white woman? I said, are you serious? I said, you're a lover, no color. And I said, really? And I said, well, what if I fell in love with a white man? And she said, oh, well, I wouldn't love him. I'm not coming to the wedding and he couldn't come to my house. I said, are you fucking kidding me? I said, what if I had children? What if I had children? Would you not love those children? Well, I could probably try and love the children and they could probably come, but he can't come. And really, I don't even know that I would really want to. I'd have to reconsider. This is the way she was going on. And let me tell you something, that bothered me equally as much, so much so that I decided for her not to be my child's godmother, because I did not want that imposed. I want to be part of breaking the cycle. I want my daughters, and I trained and raised my daughters to judge people on the content of their character. You understand? Don't judge people on how they look like. And my daughters, I have to give them a lot of credit. They came away that way. They do not judge people on what flavor they are. That was something that I was raised with. And I tried to protect them from anybody that came with that kind of fuckery attitude. It is not an attitude of achievement. It is not an attitude of growth. And it is not an attitude of moving forward, you know? And so some years passed. I had my daughter. She was not the godmother. And I decided that it was time to come out to many people at that time. And this was in the mid-80s. And like I said, she and I had previously been roommates. And when I came out to her, she accused me instantly of looking at her. And I said, really? Seriously? You fucking flatter yourself. You're not my type. You know, remember, you're the president of the itty-bitty-titty committee. And back in those days, mammary glands were a top priority for me. You know what I'm saying? But our relationship eroded after that. And there was no more, really. And I stepped away. One, because I didn't understand her vibration about people in love. And two, because she no longer loved me because I was gay. And all of that. In being black, there's internalized racism, everything all in one big giant fucking potpourri. And here we are. And I was puzzled then. Now I'm talking about almost 20 years ago. And now we are here in 2013. And almost 5 years ago, I fell in love with a woman who happened to have blonde hair and blue eyes and from Wisconsin. And we are elder women. No one was a spring chicken. And part of the attraction to this amazing individual was her courage. And she came out of the closet at age 62. And upon coming out of the closet, and perhaps maybe we met, I don't know, a year and change later, perhaps a little bit longer, you know, it all starts to run together when you get older. And then she decided to fall in love with a black woman. And then, of course, that black woman happened to be yours truly. And because she made certain assumptions about the people that she knew and the people in her social circle. And they were all seemed to be okay with her coming out. That seemed to be all right. This was a group who favored music, things of a creative nature. So she felt fairly comfortable with that vibration. And when they gazed their eyes upon me, the faux pas happened in voluminous accountings. And it was very hard on my partner because she thought differently of these people and had no idea that these people were going to show their colors. And it definitely put a strain on the relationship. But that was straight people. What I told her later, she was not prepared to hear, because when I said to her, honey, in the gay world, in the gay community, we're still going to get flack because we're a mixed couple. And she couldn't believe that. It didn't make any sense to her. Gay people know what it is to be discriminated against. Why would they discriminate against someone else? Well, that's what's real. Those biases, that conditioning still exists, and we encountered all manner and still do. One event, I happened to be working, and she was traveling with me. We were in Chicago, and we went to an all-black event. They requested my presence, wanted me to come. It was a strong poetry vibration, all lesbian. and a predominantly black group. I didn't understand that that was the only way to get in was if you were black. But I get it, no problem. But we were treated interestingly enough, made some wonderful connections with some people. But when I got up to the stage and they have a way that they greet each other. And so I greeted them and then I held up my other hand for solidarity with Panther Party. And then I introduced my partner. And people turned around, and it's upon half of the audience turning around and recognizing that she was white, they got up and walked out. And I continued to perform. I read my poetry, and my partner, she ain't no joke, so don't get it twisted. She held her ground. They never saw her sweat. And you say, well, Miss Cleo, maybe some people just didn't want to hear your poetry. Maybe it was about you. No, because when I left the stage, they came back. And it was a interesting learning experience for both she and I. That's why I say every event doesn't always have a negative connotation. Now, we're going to take a quick pause for the cause here because I have been talking a little bit. Now, I'm going to drink a little something and then I'm going to bring it back and we are going to tie it all together in the right now on how it is so important that we don't compartmentalize all of this, because we do have to speak up for the greater collective and we do have to be sensitive to those of us who are navigating, in my opinion, sometimes more than our fair share. So this is a voice out of support and love and heart for every black, no matter where your country origin is. Because if you are black, they have a problem with you being gay. And for all of the black women who we know, we fill the prisons. We are the highest population, black women, around the world with HIV and AIDS. Why? Because we are the greatest threat. So I want you all to marinate on that. And we are going to go ahead and go to a vibration where sometimes when you get people who want to treat you poorly and you don't quite know where to go with it and how they may, you don't want to give that much power to how them hit. And when this young woman put this cut out, it felt like it was for just me. So for all of you homophobic, misogynistic, bigoted son of a bitches, suck on this. When I want to do something nice for myself, I mean really nice, I head out to go buy my favorite cupcakes from the only bakery in South Florida that does it better than I do. Dolce Gourmet Cupcakes. CWC's 2013 Best Food Truck of the Year. Treat your palate as well as your heart. At Dolce Gourmet Cupcakes, it's all about the love. You can hit them up on Twitter at Dolce G Cupcakes to find out where they'll be next. I usually find them out at the Wellington Food Truck Invasion. Hey, tell them Cleo sends her love and save me a cupcake too. All right, folks. You know, a number of years ago, I was at a town meeting, an organizing meeting, and someone asked me, you know, why are you drawn to this? Why are you involved? And I got up and I said, well, let's see. I am a mother. I am a woman. I'm black and I'm gay. I don't know if I even had a choice whether or not to be involved, because the causes that I address and lend my energy to, lend my voice to, have to do with all of that. I lend my voice to domestic violence because I am a survivor and a victor, both from a gay relationship, from a black woman, as well as a black man. But it is not a problem in just the straight community. It is not just a problem in the gay community, and it is not just a problem for people of color. It is an everyone problem, domestic violence. I lend myself to sharing knowledge about what we take into our bodies. That is for everyone. I lend myself to the voice to have a right to the liberty that is documented on that tattered little piece of paper, no matter whether you are female, whether you are black, or whether you are gay or lesbian. Did you all know that the one state that has not ratified the Equal Rights Amendment, the ERA, we live in it, folks, if you're just local here with me, the state of Florida. I'm mad that I didn't know, glad that I know now, and you know how I feel when I hear something that I thought I should have known.
Damn if I know.
That's going out to LDC management and Charles in charge. But I didn't know. I didn't have the documents. But why is it this one state hasn't done that? We have got to go out there and educate ourselves. We don't get the opportunity to specialize, my dears. My daddy used to say, when people say to you, jack of all trades, master of none, look at them and tell them, it's all right because my belly will never go hungry. We don't have the luxury anymore of specializing. We have to address more than one problem at one time. I am a woman. I brought here daughters. I love my godsons, my nephews, my adopted sons. I love them all. I want them to understand how to respect and mutually navigate this journey with women. And as I've been that first one to say, it is about the respect. I have enough going against me, according to the world, quote unquote. If I say to you, though, that all three of those vibrations, being black, being a woman, and being a lesbian, has not ever stood in my way. Why? Because I have not ever allowed it to. Have people attempted it? Many times, my dears. Oh my goodness, how much many times? A whole state, a whole country maligned my name. And they do it for fodder from time to time. But I'm like that young man. I'm not going to let anybody tell me who I am. I know who I am. So they can put it out there. They can tell all manner of lies and tell them right to your face. But once again, they do not stop me from being me. They do not stop me from doing me. The hate will come. And understand, when I embraced 50% of the people, aren't going to like you. I don't give a fuck what their issue is. Doesn't matter. Because I'm going to spend all of my time on the 50% that do. And I don't care what they look like. My friends, my family, they look many, many ways. And that is something that I celebrate. But I have worked hard, make no mistake, to get to this place, to get comfortable within my skin so that someone somewhere can't negate my importance to the whole. And I will stand up every chance I get and fight for the black man, the black woman, and the black child. I will fight for women tirelessly, no matter the flavor, no matter your origin. And I will fight for my gay community tirelessly. Sometimes those fights present a conflict of interest, which then means that I have to step to a higher self. And then I am asking from anyone and making sure I exchange respect. Bottom line, all of these conversations about this, that, and the other, if we could come to understand that it's about respect, we might be able to move past a few other vibrations. But growth is slow. But growth is growth. And we cannot turn our heads and we cannot throw up our hands. Sometimes, no matter how much it hurts, we just have to open up and share the knowledge and share the information because it is important. So straight people out there, be a little bit more sensitive. Straight men, straight women, because some of you all get a few drinks in you and it gets a little loopy. And then you want to be offended, you know, when it's something that you initiated. Be a bit more accountable. Don't buy into the biases. And for all of you out there that think that every Jamaican smokes herb, that's a lie. It's a bias. And a lot of Jamaicans that I know, none of them that I'm related to, are very offended by that presumption. You understand? Extremely offended by the presumption that if you are burning incense, then you must be smoking weed. It doesn't make any sense, but it's all right. They burn enough incense in Catholic Church too. Perhaps if they didn't drink so much wine, they wouldn't have so much issues. If they smoke some herb, it might work a bit better. You know, it is, and as I digress, I have to go back and look for my notes because I start to lose myself. But again, you know, be sensitive, you know, to these places where you come out at. Men and women. Women, we are often our own worst enemies. And straight women, just because a woman is gay, does not mean that she wants you. You probably have more of a secret longing than she does. Presumptions are dangerous because they show your biases. And we all are guilty of that. Are those biases founded and grounded in bigotry and old messages and foolish messages? Absolutely. What do you do? You have to begin somewhere. Begin with you. Begin with the children around you. Break the cycle. You understand? I know that we are going to continue to have to speak to the issues, even the issues that are beyond us, because everything that has happened, you know, as I said a couple of episodes ago, I'm joyous in one vibration for the gay community and my friends who choose to get married have that right, and that the government cannot deny you certain things. But in the same breath, we are talking about the essential vote of women and people of color and the black man in this country. And that seems, and then it seems as if they've made it legal for you to shoot a black person if they are walking. And all of a sudden, those two things become far more important and to the forefront than the equality of being able for same-sex couples to share the joy, the benefit, etc., of marriage. We have to keep it moving through, but we cannot specialize. We need to hear from the gay community about what's happening. And we need to come together and voice it. You know, we cannot rely on just those that are out there all the time. We have to come together and voice it. We have to come together as a unity to try and heal and move past some of these biases. It's not about just talking at someone. It is indeed about sharing and chatting with someone. So for those of you out there that are members of the Black community, from no matter your origin, I may not have known that Cleo was gay and have certain feelings and certain dynamics. Oh, Miss Cleo, you're never going to get me to think it's okay, or you're going to hell or whatever. Here's the deal. I still love you, man. Enough love and enough respect. Hear me? Enough respect for you being who you are. No judgment and no hate. Because I do indeed recognize my joy in the people who embrace me. That is my joy. I'm not trying to bring anyone across the fence. And I'm always respectful and grateful for any ear that someone gives me. So as I bring it to that note, I want to share this one last track with you all. And this is a gal. She is serious, you know. And she is a brethren from Jamaica who has made her space and her place in dancehall, in the reggae vibration, in the conscious music vibration. And she is one of the few. And as we bring it full circle to women, and Tanya Doe, very straight, and she has her own opinions. I respect those, but I also respect her vibration coming from a Black woman's perspective.
Yo, pass the paper. Give me your pen. I'm up to slap some lyrics and some cool face again. Run the rhythm and you give me a trap. And when we spit this, we want to them find a comeback. Some girl go on hype, but them can't hype like a week. Them say we lose, but them still not tight like a week. And where them want, they tell me them can fight like a week. Anyway, them they run the video night like a week. Them say them hot, but trust me, them not hot like a week. What them say money hot, them not have that like a week. Them say them lucky, but them know of the luck like a week. And slim as we be, them not fat like a week. Them and my still with them no wine for the clock like a week. None of them not spin out for the top like a week. None of them not broke up on TikTok like a week. And them not bring it up right from the back like a week. But we are deep, them can't go to sleep. We have the wine, them on me. Hot as them see, we are 90 degrees. And tell like me, no need to go down one with me. But that no matter we, cause we are lead by a mile and them are the first back of we. All of you if you smile, but that no matter we will have long every property. Like this a man of us, them all about them. Yeah, yeah, for we now money, how them be hate. When are we them wanna be, but if I guess them too, what a war is gonna be. Yo, anyway, we not start the party, what you say? Well, we are at this, can't stop this, so watch this. And if you're bad, come take the key when we lock this. I don't understand, but you need the permit for a kiss. So tell them, take a look at what car, get some rocks. So we are here. Thank you. for them some money. Ha, they know I'm that like how we them pay them lucky. But them know I build up like a we. And slim as we be, them not fat like a we. Cause we a lead. Them can't cut with steel. We have the wine them and need. And hot as them be, we are rising degrees. A girl like queen. And if they go down, come with it. Cause we might not keep. Hot as them be, we are rising degrees. And we are lead. Them can't cut with steel. We have the wine them and need.
I'm gonna write out this Less Vibration here with Tanya. And I know many of you may be listening and tuned in to the breaking news about the sixth juror who has finally broken her silence and is saying some very revealing things as we are coming to the end of that full moon vibration. And as I said to you all, in a Mercury retrograde, it simply means that we do not have all of the information. Also wanted to send some love out to the Wellington Food Truck Invasion, which I did scamper out there before the show got back. So when I tune out and log off, my dears, I will be going to a plate of wonderful food, and we'll be catching you up on that on the other side of next week. I certainly do hope it was kind of quiet out there in the Twitterverse. Sometimes you all blow me up in the course of a show. I'm certainly hoping either because you were tuned in somewhere else, or you just wanted to listen closely. I certainly hope that the subject matter did not drive you away, as I think it was an excellent opportunity for any of you to perhaps maybe hear it from a different vantage point. And I guarantee you that the next time you speak to your friend or your family member that is gay, that is black, and that happens to be a woman, you may have a bit of a different perspective and a different sense of what their personal challenge may be. Continued love out to Marissa Alexander. Just go to conversationswithcleo.com. On the first page, you can click the link and you can get all of the up-to-date information on Marissa. And if you have a few pennies or whatever the case may be, or you have some time, drop her a letter. Let her know that we are supporting her, that we have not forgotten her, and that certainly as a black woman in America, we do need to stand up with her. Everyone that knows that this is wrong. All right, my dears, as always, I appreciate you so much. And we've said it before, but it bears repeating, 50% of the world is not gonna like you. So we're gonna focus on the 50% of the world that does. How about that? All right, babies, easy now. You have been listening to Conversations with Cleo, live Thursday evenings at 7:30 p.m. Thank you for sharing your evening with me, and I hope to see you back here next week. Visit me at conversationswithcleo.com or hail me up on Twitter at RealMissCleo. And remember, 50% of the people aren't going to like you. So spend all your time, your heart, and your energy on the 50% that do. Peace. Blow that horn, boss.